The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, from the Department of Retirement, it's Professor Diane Manica.
And let me tell you how wonderful that department is.
What was the deadline you were talking about just a moment ago?
Oh, my only deadline today was try to get a cup of coffee before I came to tape the show. And I missed it.
But somehow, our wonderful technician, Michael Jason, made it happen.
Made it happen for me. Thank you, Michael.
That's awesome.
But it's great to be here.
It's great to have you here.
You're in the Department of
Gosh, what do you have to do to get that?
You have to be sure you don't work.
Do not work. Your dossier better be empty when you turn it in.
No teaching.
Oh, my gosh. We're so glad to have you here, Diane. We will continue to be glad.
Thank you.
Until some time comes when the weather turns cold and we know we must say goodbye.
Well, but I'm hopeful that Michael will have a call-in for me so I can call in from that warm weather.
Oh, my gosh.
And tee-hee.
Snowbird.
Who'd have ever thunk it?
To your right, of course, is Professor Roy Finkenbein from the Department of History. Roy, how's it going?
It's going very well, although I'm a little sad because we're absent for the first time in 6 years and 8 months. Mr. Dave Chow from the College of Creative
Studies. Not that you're counting, though.
A string of Ripken-esque proportions.
It is true.
And I want to issue a challenge in the spirit of what's going on now with the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. Given what we know that Mr. Chow is doing on the East Coast, I want to issue the Lobster Bucket Challenge.
Ooh!
You might get pinched or clipped or something if you dump a bucket of lobsters on your head. That's right. We are missing Dave today in many different ways. Who knows what he would have brought to compliment the food that Dan brought today. and also his wit will be missed. But he has, if you've just started tuning in, he has not passed on. He will be back, hopefully, in the next show. For a second there, I got a little in memoriam. We've heard the chuckle of Professor Kendra Evans from Chemistry and Biochemistry.
Heidi-ho.
Heidi-ho. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much.
That's right. 29 again. What a wonderful life it is. Right?
I'm only 23.
I know. It's a joke. I was thinking 29 again. Been pumping my students full of this. It's only been 1 week. I'm turning 40 this year.
Ooh.
And so it's, 29 again seems just about the right place to stay.
I did that once
stay.
Upon a time.
Yeah.
Gee, I'm thinking she's a, science Doogie Howser or something.
Yeah, I think she is. I think she is. Absolutely.
But much cooler.
But
Way cooler.
Yeah. I'm not going to even say anything
about it. Don't look at me with such a judgmental
eye. I'm
looking at her with a calculator.
Yes, I think he's suggesting that perhaps I'm not.
Five years at the university, 2 children, PhD.
Oh, Just stop. Let's find out how old Professor Dan Maggio is.
I'm 39.
Yeah, 39. Yeah, 29 again? 39
no,
again?
No, actually, that's awesome. 49.
Jack Benny.
Oh, you really?
Yes.
I didn't know that. So we're about almost exactly the same amount apart.
Yes.
By a decade.
49.
Mm.
No.
Okay.
If you feel bad, just give me a better gift.
Especially after the gift of pizza.
As opposed to the non-gifts that I have not given you?
I don't want gifts. All I ask is just on my birthday, if people get together, we all go out to dinner.
When is it? Do you mind if I ask
what
time of year? Oh, okay, that's right. End of March. I think I do remember that, actually.
Yep.
Close to my dad's, actually.
I'll cook for you. We can do 40 cloves of garlic chicken.
That would be great.
That sounds great. Garlic sounds so good right now.
It is good.
Those being the dulcet tones of Professor Beth Oljar from the Department of Philosophy. I love your t-shirt, by the way.
This was a gift from Dr. Kokel.
Nice. Search and rescue from Plato's cave.
That's right. That's bringing you to the light since 380 BC.
I love it. I love it.
It's for working on the core, so. And I'm 48, since we're all confessing ages.
Oh, we are?
Well,
is that working on the core in the 1990s or in the 2000s?
We didn't start until the 2000s, but no, okay.
It's like a different chair per decade.
I was the chair of the committee that all the clay courses.
It just
went
goes
to.
On
That's right.
and
That's
on.
Right.
That wasn't meant
That's
to be right. Put down to you and your leadership at all. I just know that it's been going around for a while.
That's
a billion years.
I just remember the former provost assistant, Jay Thompson, saying a few years ago to then President Michael Joseph, should we give the core committee members a 10-year pin?
I think we probably achieved that, sadly, 5 years ago.
So now this was actually getting courses in the core, right. Reviewing course proposals.
This was heavy lifting, for mm-hmm. sure. But let's not dwell too much on such melodrama. It is a program. This is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you can win one of our prizes too. You can send the questions to us in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp. You can tweet to us at AskTheProfessor or use the hashtag AskTheProfessor UDM on Twitter, or you can find us on Facebook. So we have a new set of questions here, going back to ones we received all summer long. I think, professors, you're familiar with Kimberly Richards.
She's awesome.
Hi, Matt. I'm honored you had Ed DeWint to do the Latin quotes on the last weekend's show. Please give him my best wishes for long life and pleasant retirement. As you recall, I got hooked on ATP with the DeWint Pickering years. I think that's fair to say that there were mm-hmm. DeWint Pickering years.
That's when and I got now, started.
As I type that, I wonder how George would have reacted to the quotes if he was still with us. It's very nice to think about. He would have reacted like that, probably.
You're braver than I.
Yes. Here's another set of questions from all over the place. Since you like answers with explanatory detail, I've provided some for many of the questions. If you get to these before summer break, oopsie doodle, I'll send another set for use during sporadic summer shows. Thanks for the honor. It was great hearing Edwin's voice reading my submissions again. Kimberly Richards signs, emails, two wrongs do not make a right, but three rights make a left, and two rights made an airplane. Is this true, yeah. Professor of History?
Sounds good. Sounds good.
Dear professors, spelled with or without an E, what do you know about whiskey? Let's see here. Very, very interesting.
Well, whiskey without the E usually refers to scotch, doesn't it?
Oh, it does? Oh,
that's
wow.
my understanding.
I did not know that.
I've learned something today.
And with the E, it can refer to like Kentucky bourbon. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay. Mm-hmm. But maybe we're jumping the gun on some
don't
of these questions.
Don't ask me how I know.
But you know this. That's great.
All I know is they don't like the taste.
Me neither. Mm. Tastes like Listerine.
Mm. Mm. You like whiskey?
So delicious.
But you're from Kentucky.
That's right. But I didn't drink until I moved to Michigan.
Okay.
My first mint julep was in a backyard in Ann Arbor.
I love it. I love that.
Yeah.
In January 2014, the Japanese beverage giant Suntory made a move to buy Beam Incorporated, which of course includes Jim Beam, Knob Creek, Booker's, and Maker's Mark, for approximately $16 billion. This would make Suntory the world's third largest liquor company. Question number one. In what 2003 film, who said, "For relaxing times, make it Suntory times"? Who said this and in what film?
2003.
I can tell you that one of the co-stars of this film was a very, very young Scarlett Johansson, probably in her first major vehicle.
Lost in Translation?
Lost in Translation. Mm. Who said that one?
I haven't seen the film.
Very interesting. That was great that you knew the knowledge, though. That's awesome. So Bill Murray is the washed-up American actor in that, and he's come to the point where the only way he can make money is by doing Japanese whiskey commercials. So it's interesting. The whole movie takes place in Tokyo.
What happens with certain washed-up American baseball players.
Yes, that is also true. That is also true. Whiskey is a Gaelic word with what purported meaning?
Flat on your back. I don't know.
No, not at all. The W should give something away.
Water?
Water. Mm-hmm.
Water of life.
Water of life. Back in a time when alcoholic beverages would have been safer to drink than water you just find. So they did other things to you as well, of course, but the alcohol kept them pretty bacteria-free. The lyrics, "Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why, don't ask why," from the Bertolt Brecht poem Alabama Song, was popularized by what musical group?
The Doors?
The Doors. It was Whoa. The Doors. Well done. Well done. So is
what
it was
song?
Alabama Song was the name of their song as well, or did they change the name of it?
I don't know.
Okay.
I think it may have a different title, but
okay.
I'm not sort of enough of a Doors fan to
Very well done.
To know.
I was in IKEA this morning speaking of the Doors, and I heard, "Come on, baby, light my fire." And I thought, oh, I would have heard this.
Which is not from Bertolt
like
Brecht.
Late 70s.
You weren't like tempted to light anything on fire.
No, and I wasn't intended to buy
it. You went to IKEA and you didn't take me?
I don't know the purpose of the playing the song.
Oh, I see.
Actually, Jim Morrison studied poetry and literature at Florida State. So.
Oh, what do you know? That's right. I think I remember hearing that.
And Mick Jagger was working on a PhD in medieval history when he got...
No, he wasn't.
No,
yes, he
was.
Unreal. Yes. Unreal.
Really?
Yes.
Did he ever finish?
No.
Why would...
No. I think he found
other things to do, to make money.
A whiskey's proof is one of its main characteristics. What is proof?
Double the alcohol content.
Percent alcohol. Per volume, double the percent. Right?
Alcohol by volume, absolutely. So 50% ABV is 100 proof. ABV, I feel, this is just me, you guys tell me differently, is sort of becoming the hipster rating for most microbrews. You're going to see an ABV next to almost everything, but whiskey
I will support that.
Will be proof. You will support that?
Yes. When I was in high school, drinking 150 Everclear was like the big...
That's a big deal.
...forbidden pleasure, right? When
right.
you drank alcohol that was
you
that high.
You the term pleasure loosely.
I think that's still around, and just we outgrew it.
Well, it sounds like the expectations, right, sort of the lower standard for what constitutes acceptable proof for alcohol has gotten much higher
oh,
than
it's
it
higher
was
now.
When I started drinking, yeah.
Sure.
And I don't drink
I just
anymore,
remember
so.
Drinking 151 rum.
Yeah.
When I was in college.
Was it porridge?
Somewhere around here.
Deal.
My first straight
big
shot.
Deal.
That was
yes,
what it was.
Just don't know what
how'd
I was
that
thinking.
Go?
I don't remember.
I believe that covers all the bases.
I believe that covers pretty much it. The summary of that.
Yeah.
Nobody told me, so I thought it was like regular Bacardi, you know, 80 proof Bacardi or something. So that was a surprise.
Interesting. There's an aside here. In the past, tavern patrons who suspected their glass of whiskey wasn't up to par performed a test. They would take apart a bullet and dump the powder on the bar, wet it with whiskey, and then light it on fire. If the powder burned yellow and fizzled out, the whiskey had been diluted. If it burned blue and flashed, it was proof of the whiskey's quality. I'm going to guess that this is sort of popular logic, but it is quoted from the May 2014 Our magazine, Bourbon is Back, which is, of course, a publication from Detroit, Michigan. So,
and
very interesting aside.
Kabam!
Then it's probably not
if
whiskey
the bar
at all.
But
wouldn't that? I mean, it would burn blue if there was a higher. I mean,
higher alcohol
content. Sure, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep, absolutely. There are 6 types of whiskey. Let's see if we can do this mathematically. Rye is one. Yes.
Scotch.
Bourbon. Scotch.
Vermouth. No.
No.
It's not a kind of whiskey.
Nope.
Everything.
Does that count?
Nope. It does not count.
Southern Comfort is that its own thing?
Yeah.
Actually, I think Southern Comfort is one of the ones you haven't named yet. You have gotten Scotch, Rye, and Bourbon. There's one that's named after a state that originally, I think, was going to be named Franklin?
Or part of it was.
Part of it was?
Kentucky.
Tennessee whiskey. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Southern Comfort
what
is, I want to say.
Tennessee whiskey, Tennessee.
There's one that's really, really close to us.
Ohio?
Not that close. Canadian, like Canadian Club.
Oh.
And the last... Kind of interesting. I'm trying to see. Glenlivet, I believe, is one of these. Glenlivet is one of these.
Single malt?
Isn't it Irish?
Oh, okay.
Irish. I think it is. Irish is the last one. Irish, Scotch, Canadian, Rye, Tennessee, and Bourbon, each with a specific process that helps identify it.
Hmm.
In 1790, President George Washington and Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton created a tax on distilling and spirits. This was to raise revenue and pay for what?
The Revolutionary War.
In a way.
To help pay off the federal debt and state debts that have been assumed by the federal government, some of them dating back to the war.
That's right. It says here we mostly owed France and Spain for
and
all the money we borrowed.
It didn't go well.
There was a whiskey rebellion.
Oh, the whiskey rebellion, of course. That makes perfect sense.
And we get our first president accused of being dictatorial at that point when he sends in the troops.
Jeez. It says many people moved to the wild country of what would become Kentucky and Tennessee to avoid the tax. Corn grew easily in this area, hence Tennessee and bourbon-style whiskey from corn.
Okay, so it is from corn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Bourbon County, Kentucky was named after what?
Bourbon?
Not bourbon the drink, I can tell you that right now.
Bourbon the person?
The region in France?
The region in France, which was in gratitude for their help during the Revolutionary War.
Well, we kind of wouldn't have won without them, so that seems appropriate.
Kentucky whiskey became so popular amongst customers asking for bourbon in conjunction with basically saying thank you to France that it became the brand instead of Kentucky whiskey.
Am I right about that? Did I say something like historically stupid?
About our owing France. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
In the distillation process, toasting or charring is an ancient practice. In Roman times, Romans dropped a piece of charred bread into their wine goblet and reduced the acidity of less than perfect wine. Roman citizens would also be toasted, toasted each other with wine from a common barrel, ensuring it wasn't poisoned. Storing bourbon in charred barrels creates a distinguishing characteristic of both color and flavor. So that's where we get that. And while we think, but not drink, we'll take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
Live on tape from my dining room, the University of Detroit Mercy presents
Unplugged.
If we don't get this on the air pretty soon, we'd be too far in the bag to do
it. I'll tell you, this is amazing. Yes, the world tour continues and didn't get any farther than this.
Hey, this is a great place to be.
Anyway, the University of Detroit Mercy prevents Asif Professor. As if they could. Try as hard as they might.
Successive generations of administrations have tried.
And they failed.
We're
That's
still
right.
here and they're gone. What were their names?
I don't know. What are their names now? Who cares?
So it's a pretty interesting story how we came up with, you know, using burnt wood and the connection between toast as in toasted bread and giving a toast. And it's a very colorful story, but there actually is a more likely explanation for having used charred barrels on the inside to store liquor. Do you guys have any ideas? This seems like popular history straight up here, Roy.
Did they burn the barrel to get rid of a taste? Wood?
I'm going to give it to you. Smell. Basically, they were getting the barrels any way they could. So most of them were being used to ship horrible, horrible rotten fish and meat. So they sterilized the inside and then they stored the alcohol there. So it makes perfect sense.
Sounds good.
They opened it up several months later, probably during winter, found that it had changed color and flavor and booyah. Wonderful, wonderful whiskey. Like I'm some sort of hardcore drinker. I have no idea what whiskey tastes like, frankly. World War I and Prohibition devastated the distillery industry, but Prohibition is credited with the start of a very popular modern sport. What is it?
Oh, stock car racing.
Absolutely, because they were the moonshine runners.
I've seen Talladega Nights.
Absolutely.
Not to mention, what's the Robert Mitchum film that was done about that? Oh. It's kind of a classic. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Like I said, I've never seen that. Yeah. It says when Prohibition ended in 1933, people were so used to it, they just started racing each other with what they called funny cars because they were for fun and money. Two words together, portmanteau. And then that became stock cars. Pretty interesting. Local note, where did the term the real McCoy come from?
Elijah McCoy, who was an African-American inventor of note, and because he was prominent for his inventions, things that he made were referred to as the real McCoy.
I'm wondering how that relates to what's written here, Roy.
Okay.
During Prohibition, Bill McCoy and his son operated the Hiram Walker Windsor Canada Dock for Canadian Club. According to legend, lots of smugglers claimed to provide good whiskey to Detroiters but didn't always sell quality stuff. Entrepreneurs who bought directly from McCoy and son got genuine Canadian Club, hence the real McCoy. I'm wondering whether both stories can
They could live. Both be true. Yeah. I've never heard your version, but it could well be true.
I have to put in a plug here because the ACS, the American Chemical Society local section, had a wonderful little dinner across the river at the end of the last academic term, and they have a really great, well-done historical display about all the distilling that happened in Windsor. Some crazy mayor comes in and says everything's going dry, but they kept running, and the family, the Canadian Club group, passing down through history. It's kind of cool. I thought it was kind of cool. Okay, let's do some other questions. Hello once again, Matt and professors. I'm sorry, I don't.
No, it's a TV show.
Very popular TV show.
Walter Brennan.
Late 50s, early 60s.
Thanks so much for reading my Hollywood Walk of Fame questions. It was thrilling hearing them on your program, and I sincerely hope you enjoyed them. I also hope you'll have a chance soon to visit the Walk of Fame in Hollywood. Just don't look for O.J. Simpson star. He still doesn't have one. Oh, my. I must confess, Matt, I owe you an apology for Parkiacarcus, pronounced Parkiacarcus. It's doubtful Harry Einstein's stage name will ever come up again on Ask the Professor, but if it does, I'll make sure to include a pronunciator. In fact, all tricky names and or titles on future questions submitted by yours truly will have pronunciators if needed. Thank you so much. I just mispronounced a prominent Irish whiskey, and I'm going to live with that on my record for the rest of my life. For the record, I happen to be a radio news writer for a broadcast service in Long Beach, California. Putting in pronunciators is routine. In case you're wondering, the name that's currently mispronounced the most is that of Dodgers outfielder Yasiel Puig. That is, and of course he writes it out. Yasiel Puig is what it says here.
I'd like to hear the alternatives, actually.
Oh my gosh. Many of my coworkers, particularly those who do not follow Major League Baseball, tend to call him everything from Yahtzee Pooj to Yazzy O' Putz, or frankly, Lazy Old Pig. Just like the Dodgers, sometimes you just can't win. Oh my gosh, that's horrible.
Well, there was a Putz in the major leagues.
There was a Putz for a while. Bless you.
Thank you.
Time for more questions. What do you say we start with the showbiz motif? Here are a series of questions, 15 total, we'll call varieties. As I'm sure you're aware, Variety Magazine has a lingo all its own. Let's see if you can successfully translate or identify these variety terms and phrases. Hopefully, there'll be an English professor on the panel. We're in trouble. Some questions are easier than others. Unlike last time, the following questions will be a mix of multiple choice, true and false, and straight Q&A. Good luck. By the way, I know your other questioners have grading systems, but I don't. Just have fun, Mike Morris of Brea, California. Thank you very much, Mike. We appreciate that much.
Our students would love you.
Yes, they would. You know, the syllabus has just changed. Just have fun is all it says.
That's right.
If a movie is being screened at an ozoner, where is it being shown? Is it a private screening room, a drive-in movie, a theater that runs digital fed by satellite, or on a jetliner? What a great question.
Several thousand miles above the Earth.
Oh, it's, I don't know.
Where is it being screened at an ozoner?
D?
I would say it's the jetliner?
Yeah.
What does everybody else think?
What were the other options?
Digital. Private screening, drive-in movie, theater that runs digital films from satellite, or a jetliner?
It's the digital films from satellite.
I'll go with that.
Everybody got it wrong. It is the drive-in movie. It's, wow. That term has been around for a long time. I'm sorry.
So,
wait a second.
Can I get some half credit?
So you're like your student that chooses no grading. Two possible.
There's no grading system here.
There is no grading. We're just having fun. You're right. That's true.
I was just thinking those ozone machines that make you feel like you're outside. That's why I...
If someone worked as a terper on a movie, T-E-R-P-E-R, what would they be doing? What's a terper?
Are they cutting and splicing the film?
No. There is another term that's equivalent to terper. It is hoofer.
They're fetching things. Or...
Close.
Nothing to do with sound?
No, nothing to do with sound.
They're switching the reels?
Nope. Probably more prominent in old-time movies that essentially, when the movie industry started, it was just Broadway on video, vaudeville on video. You always had a set of blanks in the movie. Terpers and hoofers. I'm sorry?
Props?
Nope.
No.
They're people.
Extras?
Not extras. We're dancing around the point.
The point.
Dancing around the point. The point.
Dancing around the point.
We're trying to figure that one
professors,
out.
Professors,
my brain is melting.
They're dancers. They're dancers.
Well, you said dancers. I said that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was joking.
Yeah. It was completely wrong, but when you said hoofers.
The term would derive from the goddess of dance in Greek mythology was Terpsichore.
Oh.
There you go. We're having fun.
Well, if you just asked me that, I would have known the answer.
And not from the Maryland.
If you just asked me who the Greek goddess of dance was, I would have gotten it.
True or false? Variety refers to adult entertainment stores as pornaterias. I did not need the pronunciation for that. Variety refers to adult entertainment stores as pornaterias.
Is this a true or false?
True or false?
Oh, I was trying to...
Pornateria.
True. I'd say false.
That's false.
It says here that it's false. He says, I made it up, sorry.
We have some on 8 Mile Road.
But it makes sense.
I know exactly, I suppose, what that means. Miley Cyrus, Selena Gomez, and Hilary Duff have all starred on sitcoms. What are they?
Are those teeny bopper shows?
Teeny bopper shows, teeny bopper sitcoms. Ooh, that is exactly right.
Smart.
Situation comedy. And not necessarily limited to teens suffering from skin disease.
Yes. I was going to say, do they advertise Clearasil or something?
Exactly. Translate this Variety headline. The lion and the mouse powwow on Pix Prod Pact.
Okay, that's, so it's MGM and the lion and the mouse. Pixar?
Nope.
Disney?
Disney. MGM and Disney powwow on a Pix Prod Pact.
Some sort of conference or confab.
Multi-movie contract deal.
Production deal. Yep, exactly. Wow. You guys got it. They have to save space in Variety, so it's always about those abbreviated words. True or false, Variety's term for a martial arts film is chop sake.
Oh, I'd buy that.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if that were
absolutely true. Unfortunate, but true. Some of Variety's headlines in years past come off today as racially insensitive. Really?
You think?
For example, a 50s story about a poor Japanese box office returns for American films could have read, Jap B.O. sours Hollywood! ! Yikes. Translate this Variety headline. Blighty Bard biopic, Boffo in Beer Town.
Blighty
Bard biopic, Boffo biopic. In Beer Town.
Is Beertown Milwaukee or St. Louis?
I think Beertown is Milwaukee, according to this. Yep.
Okay, so it's a biopic of someone.
It's popular
Milwaukee. In Milwaukee, yep.
Blighty Bard.
Is it football related?
Nope.
Sports?
Is it about Shakespeare?
Blighty Bard is referring to Shakespeare, so let's say Shakespeare in Love is a hit in Milwaukee.
Oh, apparently this one's gone by.
It's all right. We're having fun, because that's what it's said to do.
And we're not being creative.
We have to say goodbye. Professor Oljar.
Goodbye.
Professor Maggio.
Goodbye.
Professor Evans.
Bye.
Professor Finkenbein.
Farewell.
Professor Manica.
Bye-bye.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, the chair of that department, Professor George Pickering.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
Pleasure to have you here, as always. Right. On his right, from the Department of Theater and Performing Arts, Professor Arthur Beer. It's been a long 3 weeks. And on Arthur's right, from the Department of History, and the Assistant Dean of the College of Liberal Arts and the Director of the Learning Center, Kathy Bush.
I'm too tired to say hello.
I know, it's one of those months. Anyway, and on my left, from the Department of History, the chair of that department, Professor Sarah Gravel.
Why, Evan, you must have whose car's in the way. I just want to get out, but I can't, because there's that car in my way.
It's Rosalind Carter.
I've been trying to back up.
She's been hitting my car.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter at Ask the Professor, or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM, or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.